Well, this week we're in part three of a series we've been calling For the Good of the City, and we're talking about what it looks like for us to be a church who gathers, called to work for the good of our city and to make a difference. And part of what that means, one of the values that we're trying to work out, the things that are important to us that we believe make us who we are, one of those values is that we want to be outward facing, which means we don't want to exist as a group of people who are only here for ourselves, but we want to be looking at things and looking at things through the perspective of people who aren't here. We want to be able to share our faith in Jesus. We want to be able to be a good presence for the city, for the people around us. And one of the things that that means is that we need to think about what it looks like to talk a little bit about our faith, to share our faith, to enter into even discussions with people who aren't part of our church and maybe don't have Christian faith. And that's really good news, and it's also difficult news. It's really good news because if you're here part of this church, I assume it's because, if you've stuck around for a while, I assume it's because there's something you find beneficial about being part of this gathering of people, that that you find that maybe you've come closer to God, that you've seen God in certain ways, that you are able to build community, that you're able to find support and give other people support, that this helps build up your life in some way, that most likely there are people in your life that you would love to have the same experience. And maybe you even think today, if I asked you, who would you love this church to be for that isn't here already? Maybe people are coming to mind. For some of us, we would say, I want for this church so badly to be the kind of church that my kids want to be part of on an ongoing basis as they grow up and become adults. Or my grandkids. Or maybe I have a neighbor who I know they're going through some stuff, and I think they would benefit so much from being part of a church like this, hearing some of how God loves them and experiencing it by people that can gather around them. I've got a friend, I've got a coworker, and maybe when we started this series, we gave out these little prayer cards that kind of look like this, and we say, I'm praying for the good of, maybe it's the person or people that you put down on this card that you think already, I wish they knew how much God loved them. I wish that they could experience some of the things I've experienced in my life of what God has done for me. If you didn't get one of those cards in the first week of this series, you can still get them in our lobby on your way out, and we would love for you to take this clip that we put with it and to fill that out with maybe somebody God is putting on your heart or a group of people that God's putting on your heart. I want to see good in their life. I want to see God do some good things in their life, and to put this somewhere that will remind you to be praying for those people and just bringing them to God. And so it's good for us to say we want to be outward facing. We'll be the kind of people who believe that this church, Westside Church, doesn't exist just for those of us who are already here, but for the benefit of those who aren't here and for those who maybe have never heard of Jesus before. Good news. And then also hard news. It's a challenge because I think most of us, if you've been in any kind of church community before and somebody has told you or challenged you, encouraged you to share your faith with somebody, this is one of the most toughest parts. I remember growing up and being told, you got to share your faith and, you know, tell your friends about Jesus and being super nervous about that. There's a lot of apprehension about that. Everything from they might think I'm weird or I might get rejected by someone if I invite them to something or if I share my faith, maybe they're going to push me away. For some of us, it's a personality thing, if we're just honest. We're introverted or we're shy, and I'm with you on that. It's hard for me to have conversations with people maybe on some of these deep issues. You might feel that way, and that's totally legitimate, and it's very common, actually, that we all experience a number of those things. Actually, there's some other reasons why sharing our faith is hard. Sharing our faith can be hard because Christians are often known for what we're against more than what we're for. Have you ever thought that? That you are almost told that you have to stand up for a certain version of Christianity that doesn't represent you that well and maybe seems really negative, and maybe the way that other people are thinking is, oh, here's a Christian person, and I know the things that they're against. I know the kind of people that they're against. I know all that, and you just go, I don't know. That doesn't get me excited about sharing my faith. For some of us, it's the stereotypes of Christianity. So if I'm just going to put myself out there and I'm going to talk about what I believe or how I live or my church experience, there's all these stereotypes, and some of them are true and some of them are not true about Christians and some of the things that we do, and some of those stereotypes aren't super pleasant, that maybe our faith is irrelevant or that we're unsophisticated or boring or, again, weird in different ways. Maybe even back to the first one, the stereotype, oh, Christian people, they're just grumpy and they're against so many things. Third one is because of hypocrisy in the church, and not just in the church in general, but even you might think of in your own life, that we as Christians, those of us who follow Jesus, acknowledge that Jesus has really high standards, really high morality standards that we talk about, that he taught and that he asked people to live by, and yet we don't live by those things. And so sometimes you go, I'm going to put myself out there, but they're going to think I'm a hypocrite. And that's very real, because again, we have these high standards we talk about, and then we know we don't always follow them. And sometimes people have seen that, and they've seen that in their own life. They've seen that in very real examples. And so that's a label that gets put on church and Christians. We've got to be so careful of that. Some of us, it's because maybe we have poor personal experience. The version of Christianity that we think we're supposed to share with people doesn't actually yield us real joy or vitality or passion or purpose. And so maybe you feel a little bit like you come to church out of duty, or this is how you were raised, or you've got to have all these beliefs so that you can get into heaven when you die, and you've got something to hang on to, and at the same time it's not something you're real proud of, and it's not something that's transforming or changing your life in a significant way for the better, and there's not that much behind it, and so you're just kind of following along by duty or trying not to do bad things. Maybe you feel like you're failing on a regular basis. You're grumpy, you're arguing about issues that, even if you really think about it, you go, are these the most important things, or are these secondary issues, and are we stuck in them? And if we're stuck in them, what's the point in sharing with other people? And so we've got kind of all of these things, and somebody might say to you, hey, it would be great if you share your faith, and there's tons of reasons why you would go, ooh, I'm very uncomfortable with that. So I want to talk a little bit about that today. And when I was preparing for this originally and wanted to talk about this, I thought, man, there's some real practical things we could go into. And we are going to, especially over the next number of weeks and couple of months. How do you have a spiritual conversation, or how would you invite somebody to be part of something at the church? And so we're going to get into that today. I want to go a little bit deeper and maybe try and get to why some of these things end up being very prevalent in our lives, and what might be holding us back from even being excited or happy about sharing our faith. So I'm going to tell a parable this morning, one of Jesus' most famous parables, and we did that last week as well, but this is another one of Jesus' most famous parables and teaching that he taught. But there's two sort of warm-up quick parables before we get into it, sets the stage. This comes from Matthew chapter 16. Sorry, Luke chapter 15. We're going to skip ahead. Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" So a little background before we get into the story that Jesus is going to tell. Jesus is eating with people that are on the outside. Certainly religiously, they're on the outside. They're notorious sinners. They're tax collectors, which tax collectors would be people who would be considered playing both sides, that they worked for the Romans, but they were Jewish, and they would often steal from their fellow Jews as they would collect taxes for the Romans, and they would add to it, and they were seen as huge traitors, and they ended up not fitting in anywhere because they weren't Roman, but they were working for the Romans, so they were sort of rejected on both sides. And you got these quote-unquote notorious sinners, and so the religious people get really upset, the leaders, the Pharisees, who had a lot of influence in the temple and how things were run, and they were so upset with Jesus because eating with someone in this culture was like saying, I accept you, we're friends, we're connected, we can enter into this deeper relationship. It's sort of this idea that we're okay together. And the Pharisees had a problem with that because they said, well, these people, you shouldn't be saying that to these people. Look at all the ways that they live. And you need to give them this harsh message. And instead, you're seemingly just accepting them. So then Jesus starts telling them these stories. He says, so he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, I have found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. So Jesus sets the stage with this story. He says, which one of you, so he makes it very specific and he puts it right on them. If you had these sheep and you found that you lost one, so you have 100 sheep and you lost one. And the inference we're supposed to make here is you've got a responsibility to these sheep. You're supposed to keep them and protect them and care for them. And what happens if you lost one? What would you do? Wouldn't you leave the 99 and go and do whatever you could do to find that sheep? And then wouldn't you go it out and with joy, wouldn't it be your great joy when you find the sheep to put this sheep on your back and bring it back? So a couple of things about sheep, and this maybe was Jesus' way of getting people's attention because sheep are dumb, not super brilliant animals. Sheep sometimes will just wander away. And when they wander away, apparently if they find themselves totally separated from all the other sheep, they get scared, they freeze, they shake. You can't just go to the sheep and say, oh, come on back, and kind of lead it. And so you have to pick up this sheep. Maybe the sheep is 50, 60, 70 pounds, and put it on your shoulders and go back. But he says, if you lost the sheep, so imagine how you would feel. You've lost something that you're responsible for, and you've lost something that's valuable. So maybe you've lost something, and you know that feeling. Not long ago, I lost my key. I lost my key to my car, and it was the fob where you press the buttons and all that. And, it drove me nuts. So I come in the house, and this is your mindset. You go, I must find my keys. I got to find my key fob. And so in that moment, you don't really think or feel about all your other possessions. In that moment, you go, what's important right now? Because I got to get in my car and go somewhere. I have to find my key fob. That takes your whole focus. And so you're not thinking about all the other stuff you have. You're just going through your house and throwing stuff around. And where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And it drove me nuts because we couldn't find the key fob anywhere. And so I do have my car. Actually, you can use a physical key that goes in a lock and all the rest of it. So eventually I was like, well, I got to go. And so I take the key. And we lost this fob for weeks. And it drove me nuts. And I was just thinking about it all the time. Like, is it totally gone? Where would it have been? Did it fall out of my pocket somewhere? Is it at home? Whatever. One day, one of my kids runs in the house and goes, look what I found. He's got the key fob. I go, where did you find it? And he said it was halfway dug underground in the front lawn. This has been weeks. I'd cut the lawn at least twice since we lost those keys, but it was fine and it worked. And so we went, yes, we found it. We found it. We found it. We found it. It was this great moment of joy. You probably have experienced something like that. On the one hand, the feeling I've lost something important, something valuable, something that now it takes your mindset and go, I got to find that. It's going to drive me nuts until I find it. And then maybe you've experienced, and then you got it back. Yes, we got it. This is so good. We had a small, I don't know if party. We were pumped. But I will tell you this, kind of like this. Wouldn't you call everybody and tell? I didn't throw a party, but there were people I told, hey, I finally found my keys. This is so great. We still have no idea how it got on the front lawn, who put it there, where it found. It doesn't matter. But we found it. It was so exciting. So maybe you just understand what Jesus is teaching here. That feeling of losing something that's really, really important and valuable. And then the joy when you find it. So then he goes to another story. Or what woman, so this is kind of neat because probably the women, if Jesus he's teaching a bunch of people in this cultural context, the men would have been all around him and the women would have been sort of further away and oftentimes not addressed directly. So Jesus is now including them. He says, or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she's found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin I had lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. So now we have a woman, and it says she's got 10 silver coins. Probably what they would have understood that maybe we don't is when a woman was married, she's given a dowry, and sometimes the dowry would come in the form of coins like this, maybe 10, maybe more, and it would be put on maybe a headdress or a veil or something. And so something very valuable that she brings in. So picture now, she puts on her headdress or she finds her headdress and there were 10 coins and now one is gone. She has the same feeling. Oh, it's gone. And maybe if you're looking for a parallel, maybe if you had an engagement ring and there was a diamond in it, what if you woke up one day and the diamond was gone? The diamond fell out. So what would you do? You probably feel not great about it, pretty tense, and you would go, okay, nobody move. We're sweeping the floor. We're getting down on our hands and knees. We're crawling around until we find this diamond. This is a valuable thing. So all of your attention and your focus now going on, we got to find this thing. And when you found it, I bet you probably call your friends or whatever, because maybe when you were stressed out, you called somebody. I can't believe it. This is gone and we can't find it. And then you call them back. Oh, we found it. It's such good news. And Jesus says, and I tell you, there's joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And then Jesus launches into a longer story and one of his most famous parables. Verse 11, it says, he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. So it almost seems like there's a switch in the stories. The first one, there's a lost sheep. The second one, there's a lost coin. And then the third one, now you have this story about a son who comes and asks for his inheritance. Asking your father for your inheritance, your share of the inheritance, while your father is alive, as you can imagine, is a great, great insult. Essentially, it's like saying, I wish you were dead. I want your stuff more than I want you in my life. So give me what I want. These are people who didn't invest their money in stocks and investments in the bank or something. They're largely people who what they owned was in their property, was in their actual property, or maybe in cattle or crops that they have. And so in order to give the son his inheritance, probably it meant that the father was going to have to sell off part of his land or herds or both. Really big deal to give the son portable wealth that he can go with. And so you might say, oh, this story looks very different from the first two stories, but they're all connected, certainly in this chapter and in the language of the chapter. And so then you might realize how we're supposed to interpret and look at the beginning of this story is, oh, this man's losing his son. And then you just think if you lost a sheep or if you lost a coin, maybe how upset you would be. It's very valuable. And now thinking how that would feel, what if you were losing your son? What if your son said, I wish you were dead and I'm out of here and our relationship is over? Just imagine how you'd feel like that as a parent, as a father or as a mother, as somebody who obviously loves your kids. And we realize Jesus is building this story as a sheep and then it was a coin. And now what if you were losing your son? Verse 13 says, not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. So the younger son takes his inheritance, he goes to a far country. Far country is a place where nobody knows you, where there's no accountability, where there's nobody to tell you what to do, where you're away from your family, where you're totally free to live however you want, and that's what he wants. He wants to go out on his own. He doesn't want anybody to tell him what he's supposed to do. He engages in reckless living. He spends all of his money. Good times, and then bad times, and a famine comes, and it's all gone, and nobody's there to help him. And so he hires himself out to a citizen of the country who has him feed pigs. And as he's feeding the pigs, he's in such a state that he goes, I wish I was being treated as good as these pigs. I wish that I could eat what they're eating. And of course, for Jewish people, certainly in this context, we talked a little bit about this last week, but they didn't eat pork and they weren't supposed to go near pigs. It would make them ceremonially unclean. It would defile them in a religious sense. It was this really, really big deal for them. And so here he is hitting rock bottom. He's feeding pigs and wishing that he was fed the way that they're fed. Verse 17, but when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands, servants, have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. So he comes up with a plan. I'm out here, and I'm slaving away for somebody else, and I'm not going to get anywhere, but my father, he's he's got what I need. Maybe I'll go back to him. And so he rehearses his speech. Here's how I'm going to get back. I'm going to say, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm not worthy to be called your son. And then his idea is that he's just going to ask to be a servant. He's not going to ask to be a son again. He's not really asking to be back in the family. I'd be okay if I could just be a servant, if you could just treat me like the way that you treat the people that you've hired. And then he comes home. Verse 20, it says, and he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, I love it. So you have the father going out there. It's almost like every day he's been going out to the edge of the property and looking for his son. Is today the day he'll come back? Is today the day that he'll come back? And finally he sees him and he runs towards him to hug and kiss him. And again, here, to have the patriarch of a family in this culture running, they never would have run. That would have been like kids run. The patriarch of a family doesn't run. That's not a noble thing to do. It's not a respectful thing to do. It would be seen as kind of childlike and like, you know, but he runs for him because it's his son. He hugs him and he kisses him. And the son goes into his little practice speech. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, so the father cuts in, because remember, the son was going to start to say, if you could just hire me like a servant, and I'll come back and work for you. But he cuts him off and he says to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him and put a ring on his hands and shoes on his feet and bring the fattened calf and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and he is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to celebrate. The father found what he lost, and you can just imagine what he would have felt in losing his son, and you would have imagined now what it felt to have him back. He's back. We found him. Of course, we got to have a party. He's going to kill the fattened calf. Even if you factor in that this guy has a big family and a bunch of servants, a fattened calf is way too much for a family to eat. It means he's probably throwing a party for the whole village and inviting them in. Probably a whole bunch of people would go, ooh, I don't know if this guy's a great dad. Did you hear what happened to his son? He doesn't care about that. It's celebration mode. It's my son was lost and now he's found. He was dead, but now he's alive. He's alive. He's alive. Don't we have to celebrate? Don't we have to celebrate? Of course we do. And so the father welcomes him home. And what is home? Home is where someone is safe. Home is somewhere where someone's accepted. Home is somewhere where someone's loved. Home is someone where someone's cared for. All the things that the son didn't have in the distant country where he's out there and vulnerable, the longings that he had, that one day he finally woke up and said, it's going to be risky, but I got to go home. I got to apologize. I got to turn my life around. I got to try and go home. And maybe when we think about home and we think about safety and acceptance and love and being cared for, it's not just all of those things, but it's the people who give us those things that make a place really feel like home. Everybody is longing for home. Everybody wants to come home when you think about that. To experience those things, to have that to be part of your life. We long to be home, and when we don't feel like we are home, we feel completely out of sorts. And the story, of course, is that God longs to welcome home the rebellious son. He welcomes him back. He now belongs. It's a beautiful act of grace. Beautiful act of grace. My son who is lost has been found. Don't we have to throw a party? Certainly. The story's not over. Verse 25. Now, his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant, and he said to him, your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you're always with me, and all that I have, all that is mine is yours. It was fitting for me to celebrate and be glad, for this, your brother, was dead and is alive. He was lost and he is found. So here's the older brother. He hears that there's a big party. Imagine a little bit how the older brother would have felt. I mean, his younger brother forces his father's hand to give him an inheritance. He runs away. He makes all the mistakes. He does all the reckless living, all the things that he's not supposed to do. Here's the older brother, and he stayed there, and he's worked hard, and he did what he was supposed to do and was expected of him. And here he is, and he says, this son of yours, interesting, that's how he talks about him. He doesn't say, my brother. It's like he can't bring himself to that. This son of yours, see what he's done? And the father, and he says, but what have you done, what's in it for me? I mean, you never even gave me a goat. So the fattened calf is way too much for a family. A goat is significantly less expensive, worth much less. And he goes, you're killing the fattened calf for him. I don't even get a goat to have a party with my friends. And the father comes back and says, don't you understand? Everything that's mine is yours. Some commentators would say that when the father says that, what he's saying is, all you had to do was ask. You never even asked me. But here, the son, see, the older son, he's thinking about himself. He's thinking about what he gets. He's thinking about the property of the father. And that's interesting because then you realize, oh, both sons were really interested in the property of the father more than the relationship of the father. It's just one went to the distant country to blow his inheritance. The other stayed in the field to try and get his inheritance, to try and earn his inheritance. The older brother, and older brother types, because part of this is you read the story and you got to ask yourself, who am I? Am I a younger brother? Am I an older brother? Am I a mix of the two? Older brother types are angry. They're entitled. That's how they think. What's in it for me? This is mine, and I am entitled to something. Sometimes people think if I live a certain way, if I do certain things, if I become a Christian, then I'm entitled for God to treat me a certain way, and I'm supposed to have things turn out a way that's good for me that maybe isn't for somebody else who doesn't do those things. There's kind of this selfish anger when things go right for somebody else. Well, what's in it for me? What do I get? Leads to a lot of comparison and a lot of older brother types deep down, and you might not know it, of other people, but we're insecure. So you can see in how the older brother is interacting with the father is he doesn't have this deep, secure relationship with his father. He's still kind of jockeying for position and stuff, and why'd you do this to him, and what are you going to give to me, and why don't you do this? And he's not living in this free and easy, trusting relationship. He's got this insecurity about even who he is, and of course, it's also very judgmental. You look at other people, well, I've been in the field. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Look at this guy. He's squandering everything. Out with the prostitutes, which is new to the story. I don't know if the younger brother did the prostitute thing or if it's just being added on here, but there's this judgmental, look at all you've done. He's done this, he's done this, he's done this, and you're going to reward him? Where's my reward? It's this inward focus. This should be about me. So here's what's happened. The younger brother left home in rebellion, but the older brother stayed home in self-righteousness. So now what we realize is both brothers were lost. It's just that one went to a far country to express it, and the other stayed close and was still expressing it. And at this point, when you read that and you hear about the older brother who's working hard, some people go, oh, Jesus is just bashing traditional people or conservative people or people with high moral status. And that's 100% not what he's doing. Jesus in this story, the point is not, oh, here's the older brother, and oh, he's got high standards of living. He's got a big view of morality and how you're supposed to live. That's not the older brother's problem. And if you read Jesus, you come to realize Jesus has very high moral standards. And Jesus expects his followers, his disciples, to live like him and to have very high moral standards. And you realize that what's happening here is not a conservative, liberal, or traditional progressive thing going on, because you could have someone, he does sound like he's a traditional guy, maybe like the Pharisees were, and you know, he might think, wow, these people, they're not living by the code that I think they should live by, and that becomes very judgmental, so that's true. But you can also see that somebody could come by and they could be sort of on the other side of a bunch of issues or feel like they're very, very liberal and very conservative, and they go, look at the older brother, he's so almost stuck, and we've kind of figured out how to really love and care for people, and he's stuck in the old way of doing things, and he just doesn't understand the world anymore. And then you realize that if you were a younger brother who did that to the older brother, you've become an older brother to the older brother. Now it's, I'm angry, and I'm entitled, and I'm selfish, and I'm kind of insecure, and I'm judgmental on the other side. So it's not Jesus saying it's this category and that category. We're very good at that in our culture because, you know, we polarize and we want to label us on this side and somebody else on that side. Well, that's exactly what Jesus is actually getting here. You're being judgmental towards each other. And that drives to the point of the story, is that it's about the love of the Father. It's about the grace of the Father. And so he runs out to find the younger brother and to welcome him in, hug him and kiss him. You're my son. You're not the servant. You were lost and now you're found. And then he goes out to the older brother, who's now mad and judgmental and entitled, and he says, are you going to come into the party? Shouldn't we have great joy when people who are lost are found? Just like the sheep and just like the coin, something so valuable is back. Can you celebrate that? And now you come back and understand this is the story Jesus is telling about why he's going out and why he's sitting with the tax collectors and the sinners and why he's spending time with them and why he's offering these wonderful, beautiful aspects of life to them, and people are getting upset. And he's going, I think we got to get out there, and then I think we got to have a party when people are welcomed back home. It's what everybody wants. And isn't that what's happening in heaven? And isn't that where we want to be? Last thing that in this story, I think we might not pick up on, but the original listeners would have picked up on. Story number one, there's a lost sheep. And so there's a shepherd that runs out to find the sheep and he brings them back. Story number two, there's a lost coin and there's a woman who drops everything to make sure that she finds the lost coin and to bring it back, and she has a party. Story number three, as we talked about, now we have a lost son who's out in a distant country. But there's a failure. Who's supposed to go find him? Isn't this the next part of the story supposed to be, and then someone goes out to find them? And then what they would have understood originally is that it wouldn't have been the job of the father to go out and to find his son. If a major conflict in the family happened like this, it would be the oldest son who would go out and search for his brother and bring him back into the family. That would have been his job. My brother is gone. I'm the oldest son. I have a responsibility to go out and to look everywhere for him and bring him back and try and to reconcile the family. That is my job, to go and do that. Do you see what Jesus is teaching? This is your brother. Lost. Don't you have a duty to go out and do whatever you can do to find him and bring him back home where everybody wants to come? And when that happens, isn't there great joy? Isn't there great joy in being part of a mission like that? Because when you realize that something really valuable is lost, it takes this place in your mind, this preoccupation to say, oh, we got to go find it. We got to go find him. We got to go find her. And the great joy of being able to say, and if it takes something, if I got to carry the weight, if I got to do the work of scouring, what joy it would be when someone's found. So it could be pretty difficult for us to share our faith, to put ourselves in what might be awkward situations. There might be a whole bunch of reasons why you would say, I don't really want to do that or have to do that or think about that, but I would just put before you the joy that comes in entering the mission that God has for his people to seek and save the lost and to realize that God has already gone before us. Maybe some of the people that we've written on those prayer cards, God is saying, come with me. Let's go find them. Let's go share with them. Let's go love them. Let's go welcome them home. Of course, we get to the end of the parable, and we realize in the parable, the older son has failed, but in real life, Jesus is the older son, the older brother, the one who left everything, all of his comfort, the one who entered into this world, the one who is willing to give his life for you and for me, for the world, to bring us back home. So, not always going to be easy, but next couple of months, we're coming up to Christmas, and we're going to just give us opportunities to flex and exercise this muscle a little bit of being outward facing. And we want to give you some maybe easy opportunities to invite somebody to come and be part of some of the things that we do at Christmas time, so that maybe just in one small way, one step along the way, we can let them know that God has come near, that God loves them. So today, if you're a parent and you've dropped kids off upstairs, there are these invite cards up there. These are also in our lobby. You can get them on the way out of the Connect desk. Halloween's over, so it's Christmas time, right? Am I firm ground? We have Remembrance Day coming up, but we're getting there, right? So we got a couple of really easy ways. Christmas time, maybe one of the most easy times to invite someone to be part of something that's church, because it's still kind of nostalgic for some people, and there's Christmas carols and that kind of stuff. So take a bunch of these cards. The first thing is we have a family Christmas movie over at the Westdale Theater. That is coming up on December 7th. So lots of time. We got a month to go. But take this. Take a prayer card. Put somebody's name. Pray for that person and think, hey, I'm going to keep this with me over the next few weeks. And when an opportunity arises, I'm going to say, hey, you know, it'd be really fun. And this is not like, oh, we're going to do this big altar call crazy Christian thing where I'm going to look stupid. Come to a family Christmas movie and just maybe get to know some other people. Have a fun time. On the reverse, and this is for all of us, it's almost 2 months out, but a little bit about our Christmas Eve services times. Again, Christmas Eve, probably the time of all the times in the year, easiest for us to invite someone to come and just to be able to let them know in real simple ways that God has come near. God is with us. God is for us. He loves you. And to invite people to come back at another time of year. And so take one of those. Be praying and maybe be looking for some of those opportunities to share. Here's how we get over deep down. And I know there's some practical stuff we can talk about, but here's how we get over the, oh, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to invite somebody. I don't want to get into some deep conversation. I'm not going to know the answers. It's this, I think. When we see the beauty of the good news of Jesus, when it grips our life, it becomes a joy to introduce people to the one who came searching for them to bring them home, because everybody wants to come home. So Heavenly Father, thank you that you searched for us. You came close to us. Thank you that when we were far, whether we're an older brother or a younger brother, you invited us to be part of the celebration and the joy of relationship that is found in coming home. Thank you for your grace and forgiveness, your love and compassion. For all of these reasons, we are so grateful and we say thank you. Help us now to take what we have received and what we live in and be willing to share with others in Jesus' name.